Back here on Dodger Weekly on KVFD AM 1400, the voice of Fort Dodge. Glad to have you along with us this morning. The show that brings you to newsmakers, movers, and shakers from all around your local area. And we're a program about community and collaboration, giving a platform to those that give back. And my next guest that's joining me is an infectious disease expert. You've heard her on the program before. She's Fort Dodge's own, but really has a national reach and all the accomplishments that she's done in the medical field. And we wanted to have her back on. She's Dr. Megan Srinivas. Doctor, I know this is a busy time for you, and thank you for the time. Good to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much for having me again, Rob. This is such an important way that we can get information out to the community and how to protect ourselves. So I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and it's great to have your kind of expertise in this field. And, you know, I want to start out, Doctor. You know, we've seen, of course, this is Friday morning, and we saw back on Tuesday of this week, we saw a record number of cases of COVID-19 around the state. A lot of it kind of part of an outbreak at the Tyson plant and outbreaks around long-term care facilities. But I guess my question is, the expected peak was supposed to come next week or maybe the week after. Are we still looking at that as the peak? And if so, has some of the numbers and projections changed about how bad the peak is going to be?
So sometime last week with the modeling, it was adjusted, and we anticipate the peak to really be probably the first week of May now, just given the way that we're seeing the virus acting. And the more information we get, the more we're able to predict. That coupled with the fact that we still don't have a complete stay-at-home order for our state, so there's still a lot of employers that are open and employment locations that are having crowded locations such as the Tyson plant, that does enable transmission to occur at the higher rates that we're starting to see.
Now, I wanted to ask you about that, though, because places like the Tyson plant are, you know, deemed essential and critical to the food supply chain. You know, you talk about kind of the benefits of going to a statewide stay-at-home order, but, you know, there's also some downfall of that, too, right?
So the issue is right now, even with the employers that are open and that are part of the critical and essential workers, if we actually do a stay-at-home order, we'd be able to put in more restrictions and help them create protocols where they can do social distancing while still remaining open. So some of the manufacturing facilities around here had already switched to following some of those protocols, having shifts that were alternating and able to more sparsely space out their people to try to reduce that transmission. Without a stay-at-home order, we can't mandate that to happen in every such facility throughout the state. So it is up to the employer right now whether they want to do it with a stay-at-home order. It would enable the government to step in and say, this is what you need to do to protect your workers while you still remain open.
Now, you know, the governor has been pretty steadfast in not wanting a stay-at-home order, and Iowa's become one of the last states in the country that doesn't have one. But the governor would kind of refute and say, and she has said on many occasions, that, you know, what she's done to put in place is essentially the same as what a lot of other states are doing on the stay-at-home order. Do you agree with that assessment, or do you think that that assessment's off base?
So as far as that goes, it is different. So, and right now we're seeing the results of that difference. So if you look at Minnesota, which is almost double the population as us, but has a very similar demographic, we're finding that we actually have outnumbered them, not just in the rate of infection, but actually in the number of cases and fatalities. So that alone shows the effect of putting in a more stringent stay-at-home order. And the difference in what we're doing versus what other states are doing with the stay-at-home order is the fact that because we don't have a stay-at-home order, employers are able to decide if they need to accommodate people at home or not, or if they consider themselves essential workers during this time. A lot of those employers would probably not fall under the restriction of essential workers and would have to find a way to enable their employees to work safely from home and reduce the risk of transmission. So that would be a huge difference. Additionally, social distancing measures where people gather, even just in their own private properties for parties, et cetera, if you're gathering in groups of people, we currently have no way to have the local authorities encourage you to disband. We can say messaging, hey, stay at home, you shouldn't be gathering in groups, you shouldn't be socializing. But the only way we have the authority to enforce that, the only way we have the authority for our local leaders to, when they see it happening, say, no, you can't be doing this, can you please move on, can't gather, is if we have a stay-at-home order.
Okay. I could see that you're very much in favor of the stay-at-home order. I would say that I am in the middle on it, but, you know, nonetheless, Dr. Megan Srinivas, infectious disease expert, is my guest here on the program. Doctor, you know, when you look around this local area, Webster County has had two confirmed cases of COVID-19. Buena Vista County has had one. Wright County has had a couple. But we haven't seen big numbers in this area. Why do you think we have less in this area confirmed cases in comparison to other parts of the state? Is it just a population thing, or is there differences in the way of life, so to speak, that's contributing to that?
So overall, as a state, we are a few weeks behind the epicenters in other cities. And whenever it comes to an infection like this, it always starts in one location and slowly spreads elsewhere. If you look at one of the hotspots right now in Iowa where we're starting to see an eruption of cases, it is actually a more rural area. Louisiana County, is a more rural county that doesn't have a very dense population. So it's not a population issue. It's just a matter of it starting one place and could potentially spread to the rest of Iowa, depending on who's following social distancing protocols, who's actually coming in contact, and is at risk for transmission. Right here, we do have two confirmed cases. There are probably other cases in the community we just don't know about. They could be asymptomatic. They could be people with mild symptoms. They could be people who just haven't been tested for various reasons because they don't fit the current guidelines, because the current guidelines are very strict and there's a very limited amount of testing nationwide. And then there is also a relatively high false negative rate with some of the testing, too. So we are missing some cases that way. Overall, we're still early in our trajectory in this part of the state, in the state overall. So I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see it picking up over the next couple of weeks. And I hope that what we're doing now, the public health interventions that we've already implemented, are going to slow that down and potentially prevent a lot of the infections we would have seen. But I do anticipate we'll probably see more before this is all over.
Do you think that areas like this that have had less cases, more rural areas, do you expect that it'll continue kind of longer and linger around longer in an area like this, or is it something that'll flatten out too? Because I guess what I'm trying to say is it seems like an area like this is a little bit behind what other areas of the state are doing. So will that result or translate into carrying over longer?
Mm-hmm. So as a state, we'll probably be in a very similar trajectory. We might be a few days behind other areas, and hopefully we never reach quite the level of infection prevalence that we're seeing in places like Linn County and Louisa County right now.
Okay.
Overall, as a state, Iowa will be one of the later places to clear just because we're getting it later. But it doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to have a more prolonged course. Hopefully it will be a shorter course because we were given more time to put into place necessary interventions. Okay. We will definitely flatten out eventually. When that's going to happen, it's still hard to predict.
Last time you were on the program, Doctor, we talked a little bit about the kind of myth that was going around about ibuprofen kind of strengthening the virus, and you talked about there not being any actual medical research to back that up. What I want to ask you about, to play a myth buster here a little bit, or to go on another myth, I've heard you say, and several other medical experts say, that that they have determined and believe that the virus came from an animal source, most likely in China or the Asian continent. There are, a growing number of people around the country, and I'm sure here in the local area, that believe that this is a man-made virus. Give me the scientific medical approach as to why you guys have determined that this is an animal source instead of a man-made virus.
So every virus, just like humans, has genetic material that makes up the virus's kind of genetic code and enables it to exist as a specific unique entity. So with COVID-19, its genetic code has 30,000 base pairs that of molecules, essentially, that make up this virus. And when we look at that and we genetically code it down to its very basic entities, we can compare it amongst the spectrum and create a phylogenetic tree that enables us to trace exactly where it came from and see exactly what mutations occurred as it evolved along the way. So when we look at that, we can compare it to other animals that have had similar viruses. And what we found is that the virus's genetic code is essentially very similar to that of a virus that comes from a bat population. And so that's why we suspect that it was really, that was the source, and it mutated from there and was able to then infect humans.
And my last question would be, you talked about it mutating or morphing. There are people that believe that this COVID-19 virus will mutate or morph and kind of, I guess, morph or mutate into something else or another type of virus. Is that medically possible? What's kind of the research say on something like that theory?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we do see viruses mutate all of the time. The influenza virus is a perfect example of that, where because we see it mutate, every year we have a different strain, as we call it, meaning that it's essentially the same virus, but just some changes that have enabled it to act a little bit differently, which is why most of the population there's a lot of the population that has some protection to it naturally, but the vaccines are able to give protection to this new strain that comes out every single year if we get the vaccine right. But the coronavirus, it's like any other virus, it does have the ability to mutate. We have seen a few changes already popping up in different strains. Such minor changes are different in type of change in the way that this disease is manifesting. And any vaccine we come up with should be able to cover all the strains we currently have circulating. But when we've looked at how quickly it mutates compared to the influenza virus, we're finding that it's a lot slower than the influenza virus. So right now we're seeing really a new strain of influenza popping up and causing infection once a year. We're finding that the COVID-19 virus so far mutates about 1/4 the speed of the influenza virus, which means that we won't be seeing it popping up into a drastically different version as quickly, which is a really good thing and enables us to really have a strong hold on it before we're worried about something else coming about with it.
All right. Thank you very much for kind of clarifying that here for us on the program. And that's something that I've kind of been, you know, thinking about. And I know there's a lot of theories out there about that. So I do appreciate you clarifying that. And I always appreciate your time. Dr. Megan Srinivas has been my guest here on the program. Doctor, I appreciate what you guys do in the healthcare field. You guys are right there on the front line, taking this thing on head on and doing it a lot of times right now with less resources than normal. So what you guys are doing is certainly appreciated, and your time coming on the program and trying to clarify some things and talking to us about COVID-19 and what we need to be aware of is appreciated too. Thank you so much.
Of course, of course. Thank you for having me, Rob, and thank you for working to get information out to the public every day during this.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Srinivas. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.